1067.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. Another rainy day. All of a sudden, I mean, out of nowhere. Well, not out of nowhere. The clouds were sort of dark all day. But, I mean, the bottom dropped out a while ago. Hope everybody doing all right. It was just as I was about to go on the air with Doug and the Max Roundtable. And he had been talking about, it had been raining in Montgomery, but it had stopped. It asked me what the weather looked like. About that time, I couldn't see. It was raining so hard. So hope everybody doing well. We've gotten plenty of rain here over the last week or so. But, you know, there will be a point when there's a drought and we'll wish we had some more rain. Today's not one of those days, though. Welcome in here on the Monday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com on his way. He will be joining us as we move on through the show.
Is a drought coming soon, or
probably not. It's summer.
Oh, just at some point there will be a period. Yeah.
We'll go without rain and we'll need it.
There's a lot.
I have no knowledge of any imminent, because there's more rain coming.
I was going to say there's a lot of rain in the 10 day, including most of this week.
What's the weather look like for next week down on the Gulf? That's what I'm more concerned.
I'll see what I can do for you.
What my wife was asking me earlier, because we will be gone next week. We always do a little pre-4th vacation, and we're headed down a week from Thursday.
Or so, about a week or this upcoming weekend.
No, we're leaving this weekend and coming back the end of next week. So we'll be gone next week.
Okay. No one told me about all that.
I told you about that. I've told you.
Did you know about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll make sure my plans don't.
The thing is, I tell Steve, so he knows.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then the important people at the radio station know. I think that there's. Well, I got. We'll see here, because I don't know if I want to break the bad news to you.
Well, I mean, we'll have a good time whether or not we're able to spend an awful lot of time basking in
the rays
on the beach.
This weekend and early next week, it's more nice days than not. So, I mean, that's the forecast, at least from a week out. But there's a lot of rain in the next couple of days.
And it's crazy. It hasn't been like tropical storms or anything. It's been coming in from the northwest.
No, although there is something.
Is there one brewing?
No, I think there's something spinning in the.
That's good.
Just sort of north of the east coast of Brazil right now, there's something sort of spinning in the Atlantic, and it looks like it's headed towards Cuba and then the Gulf, the trajectory that a lot of these storms take. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the timeline is on when this thing could seriously impact North America if it does. But, yeah, we are sort of entering the season where you gotta be a little bit alert about the kind of storms you're dealing with near the coast of Florida.
Well, we can talk more weather if you'd like, but I mean, I think we'll probably talk a little sports as we move on here.
There was a lot of rain, so it is worth talking about the weather.
You're not
if you
kidding.
Live in the Auburn area. We're a local show, first and foremost.
Not
and
as there much was rain a, as there was down around the Gulf.
Yeah.
I know Pensacola had over 16 inches of rain last week.
Yeah,
that is ridiculous.
And we had some nice, I think there were some periods this weekend where it was pretty nice. Outside too, thankfully.
Oh, yeah.
Saturday.
Saturday looked like it. I mean, the forecasts weren't great, but Saturday turned out pretty nice. Now, yesterday, it didn't rain as much, but it was cloudy on and off quite a bit. So.
Yeah, I think I got to spend a little bit of time up at the lake yesterday, and it seemed like maybe the clouds had scared off some of the folks from usual outdoor activities. But it was a really nice weekend. Hopefully, folks were able to enjoy Father's Day and a happy Father's Day to everyone out there. We should also acknowledge it is Juneteenth, third year, I believe, of Juneteenth as a federal holiday. The university was closed today, so also want to acknowledge Juneteenth. Although I believe it's more of an observation holiday than a celebrate holiday. I will admit I'm. Still learning the traditions of Juneteenth, but yeah, it's a an important day. And the university, was this the first year the university?
No, it was last year, I believe,
the signing of the federal holiday.
I know they took the day off last year.
So, yeah, so the 3-day weekend. And we know, 2 weeks from now, right, Bill? We're also not doing shows on, I guess this doesn't impact
that is right.
you.
That is as, right. As July 3rd. Yeah. Well, I mean, the university's open on July 3rd. So, but we here on the show and everyone here at the Auburn Network, none of the shows will be on July 3rd.
So you're taking, is it going to be 7 straight days? You're going to miss a week and then the following 2 days?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, okay. because I'm going to be back at my job on campus on the 3rd.
But we will not be doing a show on the 3rd. So
unless
Bill's,
I take another day of vacation,
Bill's,
I guess.
Bill's going, yeah, you can probably, you got a few banked up. Nothing too. You
know, oh, I've got plenty.
You don't want to waste them, but you know, if you got.
No, I've got plenty banked. I've got to use another one within a week or so after that.
Well, we're not going to do shows on the 3rd and the 4th. And Bill's going to miss the week leading up to the 3rd and the 4th as well. So we're going to have, after this week, we're going to have 7 days with no Bill. And 2 days where we're
well, it'd be
show
two with no show. So
yeah, but yeah. seven straight days with no 7 straight weekdays with no Bill, which is I think for a lot of people, you know, especially after
that may be a record.
We just got the podcast.
That may be a record.
We just got the podcast working, so they just got their fix back, and now it could
well,
be.
I have to go back and listen to some replays. I mean, you know, I do repeat myself.
Maybe
quite a bit.
You know what? Maybe we'll maybe we'll finally put together those best ofs.
That would be good. All right, welcome in everybody. It is the Monday edition of the show. We have done this and spent so much time talking about other things that Brian Matthews has made it into the studio before we really got into anything. B-Matt, how's it going?
It's going great. Good week of recruiting last week, I thought.
For yeah,
Auburn,
no kidding.
Probably some more news coming up this week.
Yeah, I mean, so we'll get into that much more as we get underway with hour number one of the drive, which is brought to you, as usual, by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And one of the ways you can get through to us is on the Kia of Auburn hotline. And that number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. You can use any podcasting platform, including Apple and Spotify. We've gotten those problems ironed out. You can use Google as well or go to ESPNAU.com. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. If you listen to the show via one of the podcasting platforms, go ahead and rate, subscribe, review, do all that cool stuff for us and help boost us on the algorithms.
Yep. So, we really encourage you to do that. So welcome in.
I don't know how it all works, but I'm under the impression that like engagement helps in these sorts of things. So I'm not the person to ask, all right, because I was useless when we were trying to get it fixed for 2 weeks earlier this month. But it's been fixed, and now we're able to deliver podcasts to you. Again, that's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Shout out to everybody at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
The College World Series continuing, and right now Tennessee has come from behind. They lead Stanford. Can we not get that?
I think that game's on our TV right now. It's in
going
a commercial.
To the ninth.
I didn't know. I knew it's after 8. Tennessee up 6-4. So
no,
maybe that's
the,
it. It's commercial.
They're showing the Derek Jeter Capital One commercial right now. But it's between innings, I believe.
So Tennessee looking to stay alive. The other two SEC teams, well, Florida is in great shape. They've won their first two games, LSU and Wake, tonight in the double elimination side in the winner's bracket.
And Stanford is looking to stay alive in the bottom of the ninth here, down 2.
Yep.
This is an elimination game for both teams. If Tennessee can slam the door here, the Cardinal will go home. If Stanford comes back, Tennessee will be the second team eliminated from the College World Series. I believe Virginia
was the first.
Yeah, Virginia's already been sent packing. Mm-hmm. And impressive performance by LSU's Paul Skeens to send.
Impressive. It was unbelievable.
The guy's unreal, right?
He's unbelievable. There have been quite a few pitchers that have topped 100 miles an hour. He threw as many 100-mile-an-hour pitches in that game as we have seen sometimes in most major league seasons.
There are three players in the College World Series, all of whom are from the SEC, that would be the first overall pick in most Major League Baseball drafts. You've got Dylan Cruz from LSU, the outfielder, who I think right now is the favorite to go first overall from LSU. Paul's Skeens' teammate. And then you've got Wyatt Langford, the outfielder from Florida, who had a great year as well. And we were mentioning ESPN.com's Major League Baseball prospect guy has all three of them as the moment they enter a Major League Baseball team's system, the moment they're actual prospects with a team, they will be three of the top 20 prospects
in all of baseball.
Of baseball. And I would think that – I was thinking about Ryan Zimmerman, remember?
Mm-hmm.
I believe he was one of the last position players to go from playing college baseball, being drafted that summer, and then being up with the Major League Baseball team that September when rosters expand. It's not as common anymore, but I feel like if anyone's going to do something like that, it's Dylan Cruz or Wyatt Langford, the outfielders, you know, the college outfielders that are going to go early in this draft.
Could be
guys that, I mean, when rosters expand in September.
No, it's more likely that pitchers do it.
Right, and the Nationals could do that with Skeens, although they may slow play it as well.
Yeah, I would imagine they don't want to start his arbitration clock.
But I wonder if one of those guys is just tearing up the minors when they arrive, if they could be in the majors sooner rather than later. And that's rare, right, Bill? I mean, you don't see college players playing Major League Baseball later that same calendar year, hitters especially. But Zimmerman did it nearly 20 years ago, and I think one of these guys could maybe do it.
I'll tell you one thing that has changed, though. Major League Baseball, because of, I guess, incentives and other things, we're seeing more youngsters being called up earlier than ever. I mean, not that they're all Major League ready, but it's just amazing. Every week it seems like more and more of the top prospects of each organization are being called to the majors.
Seems like the short-term returns are being weighed against the value of keeping the player under team control
mm-hmm.
for an extra year, and teams are deciding what they could get out of it now is maybe worth it. And not to mention there's a belief that you improve more against major league competition, right, Bill? Like that you're going to improve more quickly if you're facing major leaguers every day than you are if you're facing AAA players every day or AA players every day. And so I wonder if, is that going to end it?
No, it's that's it.
That's the
three
ball
up,
game.
Three down, and Tennessee has eliminated Stanford 6-4.
So some teams, I think, are maybe comfortable accelerating the development clock by bringing guys up to the majors now, especially if, well, I don't know, I would say if it's a team that's not necessarily in contention, but some of these teams are winning with these.
Yeah, all of a sudden, I mean, teams like, look at the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah.
Ellie De La Cruz comes up. I think they're 9-2 since he's been up, and they're over 500, and they're, you know, they feel like they could make the postseason now.
Yeah, eight in a row for the Reds. So that's one example of a team that's been bullish with its youngsters. But it's not because they're giving up on this season. It's because those are the best players available to play those positions.
334-321-1390. We're just underway. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here on the Monday Drive. Love for you to join us.
This is Lee County District Attorney Jessica.
Email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio with Drew at the controls. And yeah, Brian, a busy week. I mean, it has been a busy, busy time over on campus with so many players, prospects, campers coming in. It's like nothing we've seen in a long time. But there were some Auburn people wondering, well, okay, when are we going to get any news? You got a burst of news last week with three commitments.
You really did. And, started, I think, with Bryce Kane. We got him listed as an athlete, but he's a wide receiver, a very fast one. Ran one of his 40s was sub 4.4 at Auburn's camp. And the one-on-ones, I sat there and watched him the entire time. He won just about every battle and has great job of separating from the DBs. Just has that really good quickness and speed there and caught the ball really well. 5'11", 170. and a real speedster going to be in the slot there and have that ability to be a big play slot type receiver that Hugh Freeze really likes to have in his offense. And then Kinsley Fauston, a DB from Naples, Florida. He's 6 foot, about 180 or so. Very versatile. They feel like he can play cornerback, nickel, or possibly even safety. You know, he jumped on board, a 4-star there, a really nice pickup for Auburn. And then really the big one from last week was Joseph Phillips, just down the road at Booker T. Washington in Tuskegee, 6'3", 230. Going to be a jack linebacker, I think, at Auburn, an edge rusher. I think everybody thought he was headed to Georgia.
You would know better. You would know better than most. Who's the last player who picked Auburn that you know for sure had a real Georgia offer? Real interest from Georgia,
or that not just an offer that Georgia really really wanted? Was it Derrick Brown?
Where were they on Tank Bigsby? Would that have been? I mean, was that?
That was probably one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was probably the last. I mean, I think Derrick Brown would come to mind too. Yep. I mean, it's not. It's a short list of players in the last decade.
It is.
Where you can, I mean, especially considering Auburn is in on a lot of players in the state of Georgia and Alabama. Georgia's expanded their recruiting into Alabama. Like, I don't want to oversell it, but it's big for anybody these days to go heads up with Georgia and get a player Georgia wanted. It appears that's what Auburn did with Joe Phillips.
And Auburn was way behind in his recruitment when Hugh Freeze took over. So they had a lot of ground to make up, and they made that ground up. And that's what Auburn has to do to get back to competing at the top of the SEC and being in the playoffs and competing for championships. They've got to start winning these battles against these other teams, and they did it with Joseph Phillips.
Especially for pass rush and line of scrimmage type players, because those are the occasional impact player at those positions goes into the portal, and if you get them, that's huge. But you don't want to be building your team at the line of scrimmage and your pass rush every year based around the best player you could get in the transfer portal. I think the idea is more of these. That's still a position where the best of the best are picking one school and kind of staying with them, and usually picking one of the better schools in college football and staying with them more often than not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I also add that you really, if you're going to build a championship team, it's got to be done through high school recruiting, and then you supplement it with the transfer portal. Signing 20 transfers is important for Auburn this year to make him competitive, right? They had to do it. It's not a bad thing. But 2 years from now, if they're in that same position, that means they haven't got it done in high school recruiting, which is where they've really got to start building a championship team. And I think they will.
I always wonder if it's like the NFL draft, you know, where the positions that are most valued, you know, the ones that are in shortest supply as far as the great players and matter the most on a football field, quarterback, receiver, offensive and defensive line. Corner and pass rush. Like, I wonder if those are going to be the positions you really have to, you better win those battles in high school. You can try to supplement the rest of your roster, you know, and even on the offensive line, it might be, people might say tackle and center more than offensive line entirely, because, you know, there's a belief that you can find guards in one of different ways. But it's, I think you're, the importance of winning recruiting battles for players like Joe Phillips.
Right.
It seems like this is, you know, it's more proof of the progress Auburn has made in the last few months.
And Joseph, he's going to need some time to develop. He is a little bit of a raw prospect, okay?
New to the sport,
yeah,
right?
He hadn't been playing football that long.
Right. So, but he has that terrific looking, you know, frame and great athleticism. So he just needs to be coached up some. And he'll get better as a senior this year at Tuskegee, at Booker T. And he'll get better, you know, year one and year two, year three at Auburn. So they're going to have to continue to sign really talented edge rushers. To me, quarterback, edge rusher, left tackle, those are the three priorities you have to be successful, to have those number one draft pick guys at those positions. Wide receiver, probably next on my list, you know, in today's game, followed by cornerback, you know, cover corners. So those are the positions I agree with you that you've got to go out there and win those battles against the Georgias, the Clemsons, the LSUs, the Alabamas, and get those kids to Auburn and get those kids playing at a high level.
All right, so Auburn has, what is it, 8 or 9?
8.
Commitments now. Where would you expect or hope Auburn to be when the season gets started?
Oh, I think they're on pace to have around 14 or 16, which is not where you would want to be if things were perfect.
No, you'd like to have 18 to 20, yep, and then be able to decide cherry pick anybody else you'd like to have, and then be looking at the transfer portal.
But if a first year coach taking over a team that did not have a winning record last year, like to get to 20 would be, not miraculous, but it would be great.
You could get to 20, but you don't want to just get to 20. Right, you want it to be. If you've got 15, quality, and Auburn's commits are pretty quality.
With July 4th, 2 weeks away, you're at 8. Right?
And 9 is probably going to happen in the next couple of days, I would think, unless something changes, which can happen. I wouldn't be surprised if a tent slips in here in the next week or two, too.
And then they've even got Big Cat coming up the end of July. Yep. There's still more camps.
How many high school players do you think Auburn takes in the class of 2024?
Right around 20, again.
Right.
I think right around 20 high school players and right around 15 transfers again, because they have to.
So 16 to 18... when fall camp gets started would be a great
14 to 16.
Okay, let's go 14 to 16.
Say you got 15. Yeah, then if you're looking for five more really top quality high schoolers, because the thing is, so many of them now are planning on graduating early and enrolling in January.
Right, and the important reason to get those 20 plus by the start of the season is because that's what Georgia does, that's what Alabama usually does, in Clemson, and what that allows them to do.
Is
spend that fall recruiting 20 prospects in the 25 and 26 class, right? And getting ahead on those kids, where a school that's not in that position has to scramble and continue to work on the 24 class and on the transfer portal if you're in Auburn's position. Now, Auburn took a big step forward in the 23 class in that portal. They need to do that again. And I think by a year from now, if things go well, they could be in the position where they are finishing up by August 1st or September 1st, most of that class, and doing what the Georgias and the Alabamas are doing right now. And that's where they've got to get to. I don't think you can snap your fingers and get to it, day one or year one, but I think they're on the way there.
Yeah, Alabama had over 20 early enrollees that got in school in January. So, you're a little behind if you're not getting close to that when they've got guys going through spring football.
Exactly.
And you're still out there trying to find some guys and hope to sign them in the late signing period. But, yeah, it's interesting. Auburn's got somewhere in the neighborhood of 22 or so seniors, and then you're gonna have some attrition, and you'll have some underclassmen that can declare, for the NFL draft. So, yeah, I could see you now that the NCAA, that's one of the best things the NCAA has done, Brian, now that you don't have to worry about the 25, you're just worried about the 85, in a situation where Auburn has so many upperclassmen that could be gone, it's good to be able to bring in over 30 once again.
I agree. And, I think it'll be a little bit more than 30 once the attrition breaks through everything too. But, and it may work out a different way, but it seems to me around 20 signees and around 15 transfers will probably do it, because they do need to continue to try to balance that and maybe find some of those transfers that have multiple years of experience like they did in this
class. Well,
yeah,
class. The class that is the lightest right now is the sophomore class.
Right.
So, each year as you bring – if you bring somebody in with a couple of years, that would fit into that group and try to even out your classes so that you don't have a huge number and then not many spots next year.
There's only three players left from Auburn's 21 signing class.
That's crazy.
That's insane to think about that already, much attrition.
Was it Jarquez?
Garner Langlo and Caden Bridges. Jarquez, of course, is your starting running back, assuming everything's okay there. And, I don't know.
So you have one starter, and then
we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Tough. 334-321-1390. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline. We'd love for you to join in. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in. Here on the Monday Drive.
At the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive, 26 minutes away from 5 o'clock, here on this Monday afternoon with Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. We'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. Brian, the other big news last week was the Southeastern Conference unveiling the opponents for everybody. I think they did about as well as they could have, considering what they had to work with, knowing it was going to be an 8-game schedule. There were a couple of changes. I might have liked to have seen this team over that team, but I think they did a pretty good job of balancing. And that was the first thing that Greg Sankey said, is they wanted to try to balance the schedule and continue to keep up the big rivalries and as many of the secondary rivalries.
Yeah, and I think that's what they did. And for Auburn, you know you've got to play Georgia and Alabama on the road. So they gave them Missouri on the road. They gave them Vanderbilt at home, Arkansas at home. You get one premier game at home against Oklahoma. I know people like, man, I really wish you played LSU, but I mean, LSU is probably the third best team in the SEC.
Yeah, who do you think is going to be better? I mean, of course, we just don't know.
Right.
2 years down the road, because 2 years ago, nobody thought Tennessee would be anything right now. There are a lot of people going, oh, what a crazy move by Tennessee hiring Josh Heupel. Last year, we heard, well, Brian Kelly won't be a good fit at LSU. So, I mean, things can change, but it does appear Auburn got the better of those substitutions. I mean, I think you've got to like the fact that you replace LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State with Oklahoma, Missouri, and Vandy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it can be better if they get into a situation where Georgia and Alabama aren't home and away the same years. They alternate. And, if
Auburn's got to go to Georgia back-to-back years.
Which is a fair thing to do because Georgia did it at Auburn in 12 and 13. So,
we don't know. I keep mentioning this when we bring up the possibility of moving the Georgia series. You know, we don't know how Hugh Freeze feels about possibly playing an extra game in Athens. We don't know how John Cohen feels about prioritizing, you know, if that's a priority, trying to get that series back on track. I don't know if either of them have commented, at least publicly, about the chances of Auburn moving that series back to where Auburn alternates in off years. Especially now that the games aren't close to each other on the schedule, I kind of like the way things are now. You know, it feels a lot more balanced than it did when Auburn played its two biggest games in back-to-back weeks, or certainly when they were road games, you know, in back-to-back weeks. Like that's a, you know, that's such a tall task for just about any team. The Oklahoma game to me is the big story of the Auburn 24 schedule, and what a game it'll be. Like that's a historic occasion when Oklahoma comes here.
Yeah, it will be. But I just think when you're playing both on the road, it's really hard to balance that out with a good home schedule, because you can't put a lot of good teams on Auburn's home schedule because they're already playing the two best teams in the league on the road. That's why it's better for Auburn to split those games up, home and away, each year, I think. And
unless one of them goes down, but it doesn't look like that's about to happen.
Not anytime soon.
No.
Mm-mm. I mean, it is what it is.
And then the president, I mean, I guess in an attempt to balance the schedule, Auburn's home games other than Oklahoma, Texas A&M and Arkansas, those series continue. Auburn has played both of those teams every year since they've joined the SEC as SEC West teams. And then Vanderbilt, we suspect that with Vanderbilt, and it's Vanderbilt's first game at Jordan-Hare since 2016, so it's been a while since Vanderbilt played at Auburn, but we suspect that Vanderbilt and Arkansas, I mean, you had to balance out giving Auburn what may be 1, 2, and 3, depending on the methodology the SEC used. We're not sure if LSU or Oklahoma one of them's three.
I put LSU 3.
One of them's, but over the last.
Well, they said, though, I mean, and in the first release that we got from Herb Benson, it said they took the overall SEC conference record of every team since 2012, and then took Oklahoma and Texas's Big 12 records since 2012. Oklahoma's probably.
Right. Yeah, really good.
Over the last 11 That's years.
True. I think it's possible Oklahoma has a better conference record over the West.
I don't either. I don't see any reason, first of all, that you go back 10 years.
Four
what does
or five
it matter?
Years at most.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Sure. And then the exchange rate of the Big 12 to the SEC, you can argue as well.
That's ridiculous.
But Oklahoma, I mean, Auburn might have drawn 1, 2, and 3. I mean, depending on, we don't know if Oklahoma or LSU is you know, 3 in this methodology. I would guess one's 3 and the other one is 4. Based on the success both of those programs have had. So, I mean, so it would make sense that Auburn maybe has and Auburn has played South Carolina a couple of times in the last few years, or else the SEC probably could have put South Carolina on the schedule. But, yeah, it would make sense that you had to balance that out with Vanderbilt and Arkansas.
And Missouri.
And Missouri.
Yeah. Missouri is a big one.
It's almost like, well, you played 1, 2, 3, or 4, you'd play 13, 14, 15, 16, something like that. So it's sort of what it looks like. But Oklahoma will, I mean, I would think that will help sell season tickets.
Yes.
So you've got So what are the home games?
Arkansas, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt.
Yeah. And then Cal will make a trip
A&M
to Auburn.
A&M is the one. A&M and Arkansas, I'm just sort of tired of them.
Right.
I mean, I'd just as soon play Florida and Tennessee, even though they probably they're definitely higher in the standings now over the last 10 years.
And the good thing about it is people that like the Auburn-Arkansas game or Auburn-Texas A&M, you're still going to get that two out of every 4 years.
Oh, yeah, no matter what. I mean, no matter what you feel about any of the teams in the league, you're going to get to see them at least on an average of every other year.
Yeah, and when this first came up talking about this, I didn't think that was that important. But now that I think it's great now, too.
I think it's great. It's great for the fans, but it's great for the players.
The fact that
they get to go to every venue in the league.
If they stay 4 years, they absolutely do. Yep.
The SEC claiming that rivalries were preserved in creating this schedule makes me wonder if everyone's three permanent, if we switch to that format, if everyone's three permanent opponents are on this schedule because the SEC wanted to preserve the most important games.
And maybe that third one isn't.
That's what I mean. If it is, then Auburn's third one is either going to be Arkansas or Vanderbilt. You know, one would think to balance the schedule out. Auburn has a little more history with Arkansas and Vanderbilt than they do with Missouri. I guess it could be Missouri as well, but it just screams to me that if you're going to do it that way, then Bama, Georgia, 1-2, the third one probably needs to be, you know, 16 or 15. Yeah. Probably.
And to me, Vanderbilt makes the most sense. It's up the road in Nashville. It's close by. And if you're playing 1-2, you should definitely get 16, in my opinion. 100%.
And Arkansas has, I think, some natural between the Southwest Conference rivals, and you know they share a border with Missouri. Mm-hmm. They have a trophy in the LSU series if they want to keep that thing going. You've got Mississippi schools, even Tennessee. Like, there's other natural rivals for Arkansas than Auburn necessarily.
And then when Texas and Oklahoma come in also too.
Exactly. So, yep. I mean, so you've got a bunch of opponents, I think, that would make more sense for Arkansas, but possibly. But that's that series continues in. Were you surprised to see that the SEC decided to do a Bama Georgia game?
No, I thought they should. They have to.
The top teams should play each other.
Yeah, you can't balance it if they don't play each other. It's just impossible to make a balanced schedule.
Yeah,
it seems like we don't know exactly what the schedule.
Or they'd play nobody at the bottom. They'd have to play nothing but like the next eight teams.
Yeah, we have a pretty good idea of what the schedules would have looked like in 2023 if Oklahoma or 2024 if Oklahoma and Texas had not joined the SEC. And it seems like there isn't a team more impacted than Georgia because the eight conference games Georgia would have played in 2024, that's one schedule. Now you're adding at Alabama and at Texas to that schedule, and you've taken a couple of SEC East teams off of Georgia's schedule and mixed in a couple of teams from the SEC West. Like, it's a different and I think decidedly more challenging schedule that Georgia. Now Georgia will be, you know, they'll be prepared to play a tough schedule because they'll have most likely one of the better teams in going into 2024. But yeah, they're gonna have to play some games that were not originally scheduled and seem to be more challenging than most of the games that were originally scheduled for Georgia in the 24 season.
Yeah. Their schedule this year is not very
challenging. Oh, the schedule this year is a joke.
Yeah, and it definitely got harder in 24, although one of the analysts on SEC Network came out and said they thought this was the toughest schedule among the 16, you know, for 24, and I just was like, no,
don't play Georgia and Alabama. I mean, they're Georgia, and they're only playing Alabama. Yeah.
It's impossible for Georgia and Alabama to have the toughest schedule.
Because they don't play themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because Georgia has to go to Texas and Alabama?
Yeah.
No. It's like, gee.
I mean, I would lean, and it's going to sound like, I mean,
Oklahoma's schedule is a little tougher than Texas is now.
I would lean Auburn or Tennessee as the most difficult because are they the only two?
They're the only two that play Alabama and Georgia.
Only two that play Alabama and Georgia. And then I immediately, like, the reflex says Texas A&M and Arkansas are the big winners because they don't play
either one.
Alabama or Georgia. Those are the two teams, and that was impossible.
Arkansas, I think, definitely got a break. And Arkansas schedule has been brutal for the last few years.
Yeah, and they get to host Texas, which you know they really wanted as well. You know, there's history in that rivalry. And as you pointed out, Bill, Texas's schedule, if you're looking at the road games, Texas probably drew A&M, Oklahoma, which is going to be played at the Texas State Fair in Dallas. Arkansas and Vanderbilt are the four SEC road games that Texas
plays.
Three
in their backyard and Vandy are their four road
games.
Tennessee's
got a tough one. They play Alabama and Georgia.
Yes.
And at Oklahoma. and against Florida at home. But with those games, they also got Vanderbilt, they got Mississippi State, they got Kentucky, and they got Arkansas. And so, again, they tried to balance it out.
Yeah, they're doing that. I think the conference did about as well as we could expect. Now, here's one thing. Now, Doug asked me this today on the roundtable, and it's a good point. He goes, he told me that he's had people tell him, and I can understand it, that right now the feeling is, well, let's just get through with 23 because 24 is going to be so much fun. It's like, is it a situation where almost like, well, let's just get this one over with and get to 24. And I said, and then, yeah, I want to know what's going to happen in 25.
Yeah,
I want the 25 schedule where I'm thinking it's probably going to be a 9-game conference schedule.
I think at some point we're going to pivot back to talking about the upcoming season, 2023, and some of the games on that schedule. Because there is, I mean, aside from the fact that, yes, it would appear Georgia is going to be a pretty significant favorite in every game they play in the regular season. I think there are stories beyond that. There's been so much quarterback movement. You got some new coaches. You've got some coaches that are under the gun. We've been talking about it sort of in tandem with the 2024 schedule, Brian. The disclaimer is that it's very tough to guarantee what any of these teams are going to look like 15 months from now because so much can change. And a couple of these teams have the very real threat of a coaching change. I'd say, you know, Billy Napier needs to get the ball rolling. I know he had some good recruiting news over the weekend. I guess some big time players picked Florida, but it's going to take more than that to save Billy Napier in year two. Brent Venables is feeling the heat at Oklahoma and probably needs to win some games. And then there's Jimbo Fisher, right? So I mean, you've got some coaches that, you know, they might not see 2024.
Oh, yeah.
with their current program, and that. Who knows what that could do? Because people say, well, A&M's recruited really well, but a coaching change could totally reshuffle the deck. At places like Texas A&M, on top of other schools, too. I mean, there's just it feels like the three that come to mind immediately are Napier, Venables, and Jimbo. But you could have, I guess Eli Drinkwitz is in a position where he's got to show some results as well this year. I mean, there are multiple schools where, you know, this season could have a lot to say about the future.
And I would say that Mississippi State's coach, which I thought was an interesting hire, if he flops for 2 years, he's not going to last long.
True, true. I mean, we've seen now that 2 years is plenty for a lot of schools.
And he's trying to change that system with the players ahead. That's going to be really, really tough.
And now that Auburn has a coach, we can have more fun speculating on what other school might hire Lane Kiffin, right? So it's about like, okay, so now if would Florida call?
You think Lane is at Ole Miss forever?
Would Florida call? Would A&M call?
You know, would the NFL call?
Would the NFL call? Would Oklahoma call? Like would Tennessee call him if Nate, you know, if Heupel got the, you know, there's any number of, any number of things to do there.
Yep. It's good. If you're Auburn and you're finally through the Harsin era, you're finally through with the speculation, the drama, all that stuff. It's so nice to be in a position where you've got a coach and a staff that's on the same page, an administration that's on the same page with them, and a program that appears very much to be on the upswing.
We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Hi, this is Clay McCall here from University Ace Hardware. I've lived in the
U.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment of hour number one. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio. Drew at the controls. All right, so should we address? Yeah, I think we should. We had a couple of folks that were having difficulty listening to the drive through the web?
Yeah, I think the app is giving folks trouble now.
The ESPN 106.7 app.
So if you go to ESPNAU.com and click Listen Live, it's working, and the podcast is working.
The podcasts are working. That was something we'd had a problem with. Yes, and I know that earlier today, yes, I asked Alexa to play ESPN 106.7, and she accommodated. There was no problem there. But, yes, when I go to the ESPN 106.7 app and click Listen Live, there is nothing happening there. But yes, you can just go to the website. Go to either ESPNAU.com or RadioAlabama.net.
That's right.
And select ESPN 106.7. Push the listen live button.
That's right. You can get it live through the website right now. So yeah. So ESPNAU.com would be our recommendation if you're trying to listen live. You can also listen on the radio. ESPN 106.7.
That is true.
Here in the Auburn Opelika area, and we're thrilled for everybody listening to us on the through the old fashioned airwaves, Bill.
Yeah. So we'd love for you to join in too. Brian was just wondering. It's like, come on, with all this prospect stuff going on, I can't believe nobody's calling. Well, I think people are enjoying what's going on, but they're also waiting for the on field action this fall. Even though I was saying, yeah, maybe you want to just jump past 23 and get to 24.
Hugh Freeze can't afford to do that.
No, you're right.
We're seeing coaches now. I mean,
a lot of the players. Hey, a lot of those other big guys that Auburn is now making moves on, and getting closer to the ones that they were even out of the picture for. What Auburn does on the field is going to have an awful lot to do with Auburn's ability to be able to try to change their minds and flip them.
If Auburn goes out there this fall and they seem to be several steps behind the rest of the league, it's going to be difficult. Even if only so much of that is Hugh Freeze's fault, it's going to be difficult to sell optimism and goodwill and cheer to people in the face of that. And so, yeah, I think it's more important than ever before that you hit the ground running as a first year coach, because there's a belief that you can immediately change your roster with the options available.
And I think that's why it's so important they did such a great job signing one of the best transfer classes in the country to make them a more competitive team, to build on that momentum. Because I agree with you. I think Auburn is still in a position where, you know, recruits, even though there's still going to be he's a new coach, he can sell his vision for the program, and people will still buy into that. I think it's also some of those high-profile guys, I can go to this place, and this place that have proven they can win and compete for championships, or I can take this guy's word and go here. So I think they knew they needed to see some progress on the field. I think that'd be helpful. Not saying it's the be-all, end-all of it, but I think that's one little component of it that would certainly boost their ability to go out and sign some of those top guys.
Brian, let's talk about some of the top guys. I mean, Auburn continues to have them in. I mean, a couple of really, really big-time players in this weekend, including another one of the top players in the state who is, a lot of these guys that are committed elsewhere, Perry Thompson coming in this week and sounding like Auburn has made an impression on him.
I think we've got him fourth in the state, and he may be the best player in the state. It's certainly up for argument, but Perry Thompson has been committed to Alabama for, I guess, around a month now, but Auburn has continued to recruit him very, very hard. Got him down for some unofficial visits, got him in for an official visit this weekend. He left saying that he was still committed to Alabama, but Auburn and Alabama were even, and he was going to make a final decision shortly before his senior season. So that's one to keep an eye on. That's another situation where Auburn had no chance, and now they're back in the race. So, again, those coaches doing a great job. Coach Freeze, Marcus Davis, wide receiver coach, just the whole staff, really. On all these kids, and they had five offensive linemen in this weekend, along with Perry Thompson.
Yeah, that's the question I get: is like, when are they gonna pull an offensive lineman?
Probably in the next 24 to 48 hours, be my guess. Khalil House is the guy to watch. He was here this weekend.
Great name. That's a great name for an offensive lineman.
Yep,
House
from Warner Robins, Georgia, and he left with Auburn and Ole Miss and several other schools, among his top schools. But I think Auburn is definitely a team to beat there.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Monday Drive. Make sure that the Kia of Auburn hotline's working. Give us a call, 334-321-1390 in hour number two.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody's doing well. Drying out a little bit. We got a good storm there. And yeah, it seems like it's not just showers. It's like thunderstorms for a while when it rains. But yeah, hopefully it's drying out a little bit. Hope everybody doing well here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio with Drew at the control. Right, but he didn't play me. Here we are, and in hour number one, we talked a little bit about got Brian's thoughts on Auburn's latest additions, the three commitments last week, and then the 24 schedule, which was released by the Southeastern Conference. And so I had somebody else, Brian, saying, well, this seems like it was a big enough deal. Why doesn't the SEC just do that every year?
That's not a bad question, right?
But the thing is, once it's set for a four-year period, you really don't need to do it next year.
Right. You can set it up every 4 years, which is exactly what I would do. I would review it every 4 years.
Oh, I think they should. They should rebalance or reset the teams
and base it on just those past 4 years. I'd be fine with that. I don't think you need to go 10. Or I don't think you need to go any more than 5 or 6 years. But really, I think 4 is a great measuring stick.
Oh, I can't wait until that happens. Of course, we've got quite a while to go. Yeah. Do you think there's going to be a lot of pushback? It seemed like there was at the meetings down in Destin on the 9-game schedule. But, I mean, if they get some more money, you think there'll be much pushback?
No, I don't. There'll be pushback from a certain school or two that don't like their three permanent opponents. I think the rest of the SEC is ready to get this done. So, you know, Auburn should absolutely support it. You know, they should support the 6-3. They should support having Alabama, Georgia, and a Vanderbilt-type school as their three permanent opponents.
Well, and you know what?
I mean, heck with whatever what somebody else is complaining about. Auburn's problem.
Again, this is jumping way out there, but the most exciting thing that could happen would be for, you know, and here's something. Dan asked this question. I haven't heard this question asked of Hugh Freeze or John Cohen about trying to get Alabama and Georgia split back up where you got one at home and one on the road in a year. I'm looking forward to, you know, hearing their responses to that, because 25 would give you the opportunity to do that.
Right.
You know, 24 is a one-year deal, and we knew it was Auburn's turn to be on the road to both Alabama and Georgia in 24.
Yep.
So that is fair. And then Auburn could offer to go to Georgia again in 25.
To me, it's not even up for debate, because you're talking about one year of...
But that would be the time to do it. It seems like to me the best time to do it would be go ahead and get it out of the way.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I don't think there's an argument against doing it, right? It's just you're making a hardship one extra year, but you're doing it for the rest of your schedule going forward, right?
And to also factor in Georgia's schedule, right? You can't give Georgia 5 home games.
No, but if you're redoing it, schedule for a 9-game schedule, they could have 5 home games.
Yeah, I guess you could figure out if it's going to be a 9-game schedule in 2025, they could do it
that way. That'd be the year Auburn gets 4 and Georgia gets 5 home games.
The SEC was careful in 24 not to have anyone playing in the same venue 2 years in a row. I wonder if they will. I wonder if they'll take that tactic in 2025, or if they will decide that they need to keep those rivalries. Yeah, I guess in 25 they could redo that. I mean, because that was the thinking with the Georgia game moving initially was that the 2013 schedule was going to be a bridge year. Either 12 or 13 was a bridge year after the new teams joined the league, and that allowed them to sort of reset.
12 was the bridge year, but I don't know why they ended up. You ended up with three teams making back-to-back trips on the road. Auburn, Ole Miss, and somebody else.
Yeah, it was. It had to do. I guess it had to do with adjustments they had to make to those individual schedules and with teams joining the league. I don't totally understand it either. But it doesn't. I don't know. I wonder if it's a subject beyond like fans and.
Oh, it probably is. But I think that this would be the best opportunity to try to get it caught up. Doing it while you're in that long term, which was really convoluted, 8-game schedule with 14 teams, probably would have really messed things up. And not doing it in the 1 year in 24 makes sense. But I think 25 might be your last decent opportunity to do it without really messing things up in the future.
No, I agree. I just, to me, it's a no-brainer. Auburn should absolutely ask the SEC to do that, and if if it can work out to do it that way. And it does get complicated because when you go to that 6-3, 1 year you're playing 5 home games and 4 road games. The next year you're playing 4 home and 5 road in the conference. So they got to figure all that out. But if there's a way to do it, I think Auburn should absolutely try to get that done.
Do you like the game where it is on the schedule right now? Do you like that they moved it to earlier in the year? Or do you think they should consider moving things?
I'd love to keep it earlier.
Okay. Oklahoma and Texas play the Red River rivalry early, you know, and now if they keep that, then Texas and Texas A&M can play that late November game that everybody wants to see, that I personally want to see. To me, I put that up there with the Egg Bowl, which I want to watch every year. Sometimes my schedule doesn't allow me to do that. But I'm watching it in some way, shape, or form. If I have to follow it on my computer while I'm watching another game, it's fine. But to me, that's going to be one of those type of games in the SEC.
334-321-1390. That is the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. Let's get to it. And Jerry is up. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Just want to talk a little recruiting. I saw where that Perry Thompson considered us equal to Alabama, even though he was still committed to Alabama. And that sounded like great news. And then saw where Cam Coleman from Phoenix City had us in his top 8. So that seems like 2 really great additions if we could land those guys.
Yeah, and I think Auburn is higher on Cam Coleman's door than just the top 8. I would say Auburn's in the top 2 to 3 there. They've recruited – that's another kid that they've recruited really, really hard and are right there in the middle of his recruitment. And, you know, I'm not saying the Auburn's tend to be, but they could be, possibly.
Sounds great. One other question. When is the renovations going to start for the Plainsman Park?
It is supposed to start in July, but we don't have the final plan or project yet, but that should be coming up soon, too. And I think they're really excited about the changes that are going to be made, and certainly
I'm
too.
Excited.
Yeah,
I'm excited. The only other thing, I want to see some more offensive and defensive linemen, you know, committing, and I'm sure that'll happen.
Yeah, right now they don't have any offensive line commitments. I think you could. I guess Joseph Phillips is technically a Jack linebacker.
Line, yeah, sort of.
But you could in another system, you could call him a defensive end. But I agree. And this, if you really look at the numbers on the roster right now, this has got to be a really good defensive line and offensive line class because you're losing some dudes there and you haven't necessarily recruited well there in previous years. So you've got to get some talented guys in here. So that will be a focus. And I think Auburn will get their first offensive line commit this week. I think Auburn's the team to beat for Khalil House. Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said he could have a decision this week, and I think he will.
And Joe Phillips was a great flip. Yeah. And what is he going to play? Is he going to be a middle linebacker or at the edge?
Well, he could play any of the 3 positions. But if you look at his body, you look at his frame, his athleticism, I think he's a future Jack, which is an outside linebacker at Auburn. In a 4-3, it could be considered that rush defensive end like a Carl Lawson used to play, right? So that's the position Joseph Phillips, I think, is going to play. And I think you're going to see him get better and better as he continues to get more experience. And maybe not a guy that comes in and has, you know, 8 sacks as a true freshman, but a guy by the time he's a sophomore or second-year player that he's a much, much better player.
Well, great news. Y'all have a good day.
Appreciate the call, Jerry. 334-321-1390. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline. And again, that's one of the ways you can get through to us.
Yeah, you can text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform, go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center.
Hour number 2 of the Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Got plenty of time left here this hour. Love for you to join in anything on your mind, sports-wise.
We're seeing some baseball portal movement, right, Brian? I mean, that's something that's going on right now. As people, it's easy to let that slip through the cracks, but baseball's portal opened when the tournament was announced.
Yeah, I mean, right.
A couple of weeks ago, and that's still going on. Mm-hmm. The College World Series happening in Omaha. Auburn's had some pickups.
I was going to say, last I saw, was it three? Who's the latest?
Cooper Weiss is a right-handed bat, shortstop, middle infielder out of Miami, Ohio. I don't know if they still call it Miami, Ohio or not, but that's what I call it. Last year, batted .303 with 15 doubles, 12 home runs, 46 RBIs, and had 17 stolen bases.
Oh, that's good.
So
I think they would argue that since you don't call it Miami, Florida, they don't want to be called Miami, Ohio.
But I think to separate them somehow.
Yeah, right. I know. You're right. I think it's I guess Miami University.
I think that may be the correct way to say it.
Is Miami University
MU, is University of Miami?
I don't know. I always think of Ohio in the parentheticals when you see Miami. That Miami
seems like that. Yeah, that's always in parentheses Ohio.
Mac Miami.
And the other guys they've gotten so far, they got a left-handed pitcher, Carson Myers, out of UAB. He was UAB's top starter last year. Had 3.52 ERA, 70 strikeouts in 71 innings. Mason Manners and. Left-handed hitting corner outfielder from Jacksonville State. Batted .341, 12 doubles, 12 home runs, 45 RBIs last year. Probably play, my guess would be left field possibly, because what's his name? He's moving to center, I think.
Chris Stanfield.
Yeah, Chris Stanfield. Oh, what's wrong with me? And then they got first baseman DH Christian Hall from UAB.
Yeah, so two from UAB and one from Jack State. That's three I'd seen.
He only batted .258 last year, 10 doubles, 8 home runs, 34 RBIs, which is still pretty good. But the year before, he batted .370 with 9 doubles, 11 home runs, and 48 RBIs. So he's got some real power. Another left-handed bat. You put him, Manners, Ike Irish, and Cooper.
And, you're talking about power?
Left-handed power.
Burry, yeah.
Yeah, that's half your lineup right there, basically. That's four guys that's got some pop from the left side. And then the guy I mentioned first, Cooper Weiss, is a nice little right-handed bat there, too. So
double-figure homers and steals.
Cam Hill is going to South Alabama. Cam Hill, I believe, announced, I believe that's the only player in the portal who has announced a destination somewhere else of the guys that are going to keep playing college baseball from Auburn. But Cam Hill, 60 starts for Auburn over his career, and he's going to spend his final year of eligibility down in Mobile at Stanky Field.
Yeah, so people don't think about the transfer portal, but I mean, yes, it has been. We were talking about it. I mean, coaches, while they were getting ready for the postseason, having to be dealing and trying to. Contact and talking with players in the portal.
Oh, Brian's got the breaking news. He's got the breaking news finger. Oh,
we were about to get a commercial, so let's wait.
Let's wait. Okay.
No. Let's go ahead. Let's have the breaking news
from the College World Series Jello Shot Challenge.
Oh boy.
LSU has set a new all-time team total record already.
What a shock!
21,435 shots so far, blowing away everybody.
Man, we're just a couple of days in.
And then also set a record for most shots purchased by one person. Todd Graves, head fry cook from Raising Cane's, out here supporting LSU baseball. So LSU living up to their reputation.
Yep. That's exactly right. They have to win tonight.
Yeah.
No, they don't. I mean, the thing is, they're in the winner's bracket. They're going to be around for a couple of more days.
I think we were talking about Todd Graves during a commercial break the other day.
I think that's the guy
we were absolutely talking about. We'll tell you that story during the commercial, Brian.
Great. Yeah, we need to get to our first break of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Life isn't made for joint or orthopedic.
Welcome back into the drive. 19 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, we've talked some recruiting, baseball transfer portal. Speaking of baseball, the College World Series continuing. SEC doing everything they can. They only lost by an SEC team in the College World Series was in the SEC-only matchup.
Yep.
So, I mean, somebody was going to have to lose, and that was Tennessee, and they staved off elimination today by eliminating Stanford.
Big game tonight. LSU and Wake Forest is a really – I mean, that's – I would say the winner of that game probably becomes the favorite in most folks' eyes to win the entire thing. The question for LSU is, what can they do without Skeens going? He just pitched against Tennessee, so they'll try to get Skeens back in the moment they can. I don't know what the rules are about how long a pitcher has to wait in the College World Series before. There are rules in place, right, Bill? about how often you can use a pitcher and what he can do in the College World Series.
Like, is there? I'm not sure.
I thought there were usage rules.
I'm not sure.
About, like, I mean, I mean for player safety reasons, like, you couldn't just start the same guy in every game of the College World Series and let him pitch. I feel like there's an innings limit or a pitch limit for guys.
I'll have to look at that.
I thought there were
rules. I know there
in place.
Is for younger, you know, like for the Little League World Series. I didn't know if there was for the College World Series.
But we'll see what LSU can do with the rest of their rotation in the games where, you know, Skeens might be unavailable.
Well, what LSU is going to need to do is they're going to need to figure out ways of scoring, and they're a team that can really score. They've got a couple of other guys that have really good stuff. All right, let's see. How often can a pitcher pitch in the
I don't know if there's a limit in an individual game. I thought there was a limit, and maybe there's not a limit in how many times a guy can appear. I mean, there's the fellow from Stanford who just pitched for what was 150 something in Stanford's win.
Yeah, he came back. He was a pitcher today against Tennessee.
Did he start again today? Okay, yes, well, maybe not then. Maybe there's not a limit.
Somebody knows the answer to that, I've got differing answers, but these are from states, and so it's like I'm not worried about what the state of Ohio or the state of Georgia, so I'm really not sure if there is. I don't know that I can recall hearing that during a College World Series.
Maybe there's not. I could have sworn there was a rule in place, but maybe not.
All right. Well, you can help us out if you know the answer to that. 334-321-1390. But LSU, I don't know who's going for them tonight, but this is a huge ball game here tonight, because again, the winner is in great shape. You win your first two, you are in great shape. You sit back and you watch other teams knock themselves off, and then they have to beat you twice. Because you're a win away after you win the first two of playing for the championship.
334-321-1390, the number to dial, Brian. And wanted to include Brian Matthews in here. Hello? since he's here.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to the pitching thing. I haven't really had anybody bring that up to me, but. I do know that LSU has had some inconsistencies in their pitchers after their stud Friday night guy. But, if they can win tonight, that would put two SEC teams in the driver's seat to meet in the finals.
Which wouldn't be a surprise. And, I mean, you'd have to feel like the winner tonight is in great shape. And then Florida. I mean, those are probably your two favorite. I mean, the three teams that got talked about the most were Florida, Wake, and LSU.
Yep.
And does LSU have enough pitching? And we'll find out maybe tonight.
Yeah, we will. This should be a great matchup. And to me, the tournament has been terrific so far.
A lot of comebacks. Every game. Well, was Tennessee won by two?
Yeah, they were down 4-0 and came back and scored.
But I mean, almost. I think all the games have been decided by a run until that one.
The games in Omaha have been great. The a couple of the super regional series were sensational too. The Tennessee Southern Miss had a really thrilling. And to, I mean, the final game itself wasn't there, but I mean, there were moments in that series that were just electric. And there have been a couple of environments like that where it's been a great tournament. I still think, LSU Wake tonight will go a long way towards deciding who seems to be the team to beat at the moment. And for Wake Forest, it's they've been throttling teams. So I want to see what Wake can do when they face off against one of the favorites like LSU.
334-321-1390. Let's see, Brian, talk a little bit about all the things that's going on there at AuburnSports.com. I mean, with even though there's not as much competition on the field and everything, there is still plenty going on.
There is, and Auburn just came through a long few weeks of camps, official visits. That's all kind of slowed down now. I think their last camp was last Thursday or Friday. I'm not sure that they're going to have any more official visits before the dead period starts. So But I do expect some of the folks that have been in for officials and or unofficials to have their decisions, and I think Auburn's going to pick up some commitments. And then after about a four-week dead period at the end of July, you had that last week, and Auburn's going to have some visits then. They're going to have a Big Cat weekend or Big Cat recruiting day, whatever you want to call it, and there should be a lot of recruiting happening there. So plenty going on in that area. And then, of course, you know, baseball portal, stuff like that we're watching closely. And, you know, anything else that pops up, we'll be on top of auburnsports.com. You can follow me on Twitter at BMATAU.
Yeah, got to encourage folks to check out all the great work that Brian and everybody does at auburnsports.com. What was the music this week, Brian?
Brad Paisley, who I'm not, you know, real familiar with, but, you know, I learned some different things about him. Didn't know he was married to an actress, Kimberly Williams, so, you know. It was interesting.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with Brad Paisley. This is I think it's the 10th anniversary of James Gandolfini passing away. I think that was right. I think that was today. And then yesterday was Roger Ebert's birthday. I think 80 or 81 years old. So a couple of historic dates for different reasons.
Yeah, The Sopranos to me is still the greatest all time. TV show. Yeah. It set the bar for everybody else afterwards.
A lot of shows before that were scared because you didn't want to do a TV show that assumed people had seen all the previous episodes.
Yeah.
Like it was dangerous to do something that wasn't episodic or, you know, case of the week or something like that. Like to actually do like a serial like drama that, I mean, you're lost if you jump in halfway through the Sopranos, because there's so much. I mean, there's episodes that can be entertaining, but really it really matters if you've seen all the previous ones. And before DVRs and DVDs, you know, different ways that you could actually watch these things, like it was scarier to attempt something like that. I guess, right. I mean, there'd been primetime soaps and serial dramas and things like that, but it was much more like procedural was the way to do it, and The Sopranos was not that in any way, and got, you know, it gets experimental. You have the weird, you know, dream episodes and there's stuff. So it's it was a very different. Have you watched The Wire?
I've watched
Wire
The Sopranos guy. Probably That's, three times through. And the other thing about The Sopranos is they really, to me, started this whole prestige TV era. And if you look at media right now, 15 or 20 years ago, the silver screen was it. Right, and TV was down the list a lot, right? Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, getting the best actors, having the best scripts, having the big budgets. And now that's kind of flipped in a way. I'm not saying it's totally flipped, but right now I think prestige TV, especially with everything that happened to movie theaters and movies over the last couple of years, it's just really taken off. And the streaming also has, you know, helped boost that too.
I wonder if the era's over though. Like, I'm not going to argue like there was absolutely that era, but I wonder if all the best TV shows of that era are shows that are like no longer making new episodes. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if it was like a streaming. We had this amazing era of streaming television and new, like, you know what I mean? But
Succession would be in my top five.
Yeah, but Succession's over.
I know, but
like this. That's what I mean. Like, that's the most recent one. But like, if you're going to talk about like, you know, the shows that, you know, The Sopranos, you know, gave us, with Mad Men and Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and Game of Thrones and, you know, all these, like, these are all shows that have that have concluded. Like, so I think there's like, but that absolutely, like, there was an era where like it felt like the boundaries just kept getting pushed.
Yeah, and
And maybe it's not over,
yeah.
But I do wonder.
I don't know what is going to be up next is greatness. We'll see. Yeah. I think some of the ones that tried to come out with last year, the Game of Thrones prequel, it didn't totally enthrall me. I thought the
Succession was great.
I thought the Lord of the Rings thing they did on Amazon was very, very shaky to me. And if you haven't watched it, the Star Wars one they did.
Do you like Andor? Andor. Right?
Yeah, Andor.
I never watched it.
Andor was fantastic.
Yeah, that's the one people.
I just, for some reason, couldn't.
But I think it's the drama series that usually get pulled up, right, as the great ones. But I would say if you're looking for something and you can't find anything and you haven't watched Andor, go back and watch it. It was terrific.
I still am able to find things.
Yeah,
we watched the Diplomat over the weekend.
Yeah,
that was pretty good. I'm ready for the next season.
Is that the one with the girl from the Americans in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. We watched that. That's pretty good.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Half an hour to go. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 25 minutes here on this Monday afternoon. Oh, let's see. As we look ahead for this week, I mentioned a while ago that I will be gone next week. But this Wednesday, the drive will be on the road.
Yeah,
we're at our special Wednesday appearance at Franklin Tire.
We'll be at Franklin on Wednesday. Looking forward to that as we always do. You know, it's great folks there at Franklin Tire and Auto and encourage folks to drop by or go to Franklin, you know, whenever they need to and get their car checked out.
Yep. So, if you're around, you can stop by and give us a holler there on Wednesday. As we go into the final 25 minutes, let's see what have we not talked about an awful lot. We haven't really even mentioned the U.S. Open from this past weekend. I've heard nothing but complaints, Dan, from people that watched the U.S. Open. A lot of folks that watched it felt like they were watching something during COVID because there are no huge galleries there at the LA Country Club.
Yeah, no, you can't. That's a venue that doesn't really support big crowds in a way where I guess that you still have space for everything else that you need to do for the events.
Apparently, some of the players have had comments too about, you know, it's strange playing, you know, expecting to hear roars, and there's really not a whole lot till you get in front of some grandstands.
You know what, though? I think that's a sport, and I thought about it during COVID. Like, that was a sport where the silence didn't take away nearly as much as it did when you were watching a sport in an empty arena or when you were watching
True.
A sport in...
I agree.
Like, I thought there were a couple of sports. Don't want to say it was better, but I remember the tournament, the major that...
Get in the hole!
No, well, the one Morikawa won, where it was, I mean, you would see this golfer and they'd zoom out and it's the golfer and his caddy and they're virtually alone, you know, on the course. And that's, you know, it's a different type of pressure and a different type of intensity than it is with all the people around. And so, I get that it's maybe non-traditional, to see the crowd size the way it was this weekend. But I don't know. I think there's something... there's something engaging about that too when you make it more of a more of a limited capacity event. As long as what you don't want to see are big empty spaces where people should be.
Oh no, indicating that's different. Yes,
indicating a lack of interest. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to see that on the broadcast. And I don't think that was the case at the U.S. Open this weekend. I don't think they had a bunch of seats reserved and fans just didn't show up.
No,
in Los Angeles.
Wasn't. There's just not the space or the ability to have a lot of fans.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, it's a country club sandwiched into a bunch of residential neighborhoods between Beverly Hills.
Some great shots.
Yeah, I mean,
from there as you look down.
The scenery's. I was mentioning, Brian, that it's not very far from UCLA's campus.
Is that right?
Where they held the tournament this weekend. It's pretty close to the eastern side of UCLA's campus, and there's a whole... You know, one of the first few holes of the golf course, I think. I've only driven by it. I don't know too much about it intimately, but the one of the first few, I guess, you stand on the tee box and you look around, and there's, like, you can see the back of the Playboy Mansion because it has a view of this golf mm-hmm. course. You know, it's part of the residential neighborhoods there. You know, pretty close to. They're the same residential neighborhoods that keep UCLA from getting a football
it's
stadium.
Slap in the middle of Beverly Hills.
Yeah, it's
between. I don't know if you saw that post by Joe Pompliano. It's just amazing how much that real estate is worth.
Yeah.
But because of different laws they passed there, they don't have to pay the taxes that you would normally have to pay, and really put the whole thing out of business.
And the residential neighborhoods between the western border of the LA Country Club and the UCLA campus, like, there's a sort of a residential neighborhood there with quite a few houses, and that's the neighborhood, and those residents are big opponents of the whenever there's a proposed on-campus UCLA football stadium. You know, the thought of moving UCLA's work on, because there's I mean, it would be difficult, but you could probably find some space on the eastern side of the campus to put a potential stadium. But the headaches that would cause for the people who live nearby are just, I mean, they fight tooth and nail whenever it's suggested. And that's it's same. They were in the spotlight. That neighborhood was in the spotlight this weekend because it's really close to where. And I think there were concerns about what that would do for traffic and what that would do for, you know, the number of pedestrians and patrons, you know, trying to come around. So it's a unique place to hold a tournament, and a tournament that had a thrilling end, by the way. I mean, what the action there on Sunday with Rory and the eventual winner, Wyndham, coming down to the wire, it was some good golf.
I was watching baseball.
Yeah, how many people had Wyndham Clark?
I don't know. I don't think a lot of folks.
How many people knew Wyndham Clark?
I mean, as the event continued, I think more and more people thought
like
it could be a possibility. Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, it's a. It's something though. I mean, it's what especially to face down big, you know, bigger names. And I mean, Rory has won one of these in about a decade, but he's usually competitive and one of the top golfers. So yeah, it was a big time win. Maybe there's a new superstar in golf. Maybe it was a Cinderella story, and we'll see what happens moving forward.
334-321-1390. As we continue here on the Monday drive, let's see what's.
I just did my 10 minutes, Bill. Your
yeah,
turn.
I know.
Your turn.
Well, no, I mean I was
I've
talking.
I've got some more info on that golf course though. 320 acres. Its true value is $8 billion.
Wow.
But the laws allow it to be assessed at only $22 million. So instead of paying around $80 million,
so their taxes are instead like of 80 a million serious taxes, tax break.
They play about $220,000 a year. So that keeps them in business. And here are some interesting things about the club itself. No celebrities are allowed. There's no social media post allowed.
What happens if you're in the club already and then you become a celebrity?
I don't know. They didn't think of that. No shorts, tailored pants only, sport coats in the clubhouse after 6. No changing shoes in the parking lot.
Yeah, man.
No headphones, earbuds, or athletic clothes. No photos or videos of the club on social media.
Yeah, they're not kidding around.
Nope.
334-321-1390. Inspector is up next. Hey, Inspector.
Hey, Dan, I got a question for you.
What's up, Inspector?
Yeah, nothing much. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, you too. You're a Dodger fan, right?
Yeah, I mean, now that they've won a championship, I find myself less diehard about it. There were some players on the championship team that I wanted to see, you know, rewarded with a ring. And yeah, I mean, I want to see them do well, but it's cool. It's cool now that I've seen them win a championship.
Let me get my question in before you go home for 10 minutes. Give me your take on what happened this weekend at Dodger Stadium.
Oh, the protest?
Yeah, the Nutty Nuns.
Yeah, it's some sort of advocacy group. I'm not terribly familiar with them, and they were canceled, and then they were uncanceled, and then some people came and showed up and protested.
Yeah, my question again is, how much longer are we going to put up with MLB doing this stuff? I mean, last year with the All-Star game. It was awful.
I don't know what to say. I mean, I must have missed that with everything else going on. I don't have any idea what you're talking about for this weekend, but.
Yeah, well, I don't like talking about it either, but they seem to want to put it in your face every time they get a chance. And I don't understand why MLB is bowing to this such stuff. I mean, what they did to Hank Aaron was disgraceful. I mean, the man died following the All-Star game, and they couldn't give him that last moment.
What?
You know, I used to be a huge MLB fan, and I grew up liking the Dodgers, and I ended up going over to the Braves. But now I find myself watching less and less. Now, it's awful what's going on with the players that speak out. I mean, they get chastised, and some of them get fired. But anyway, I just wanted to see what you thought about that.
All right,
West Coast fan.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call, Spectre.
Yeah, I was going to say, again, I really can't respond. I keep up with games. I must have missed whatever was going on. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Introducing Sail the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final 10 minutes or so here on the Monday edition of the Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews. So, Brian, back to the talking about players visiting and camps and everything. What is the schedule? You were talking about it a while ago. I know the dead period is July. We've only got another 11 days left here in June. So I would imagine it's going to be fairly busy.
Not so far as visits and camps. They're pretty much over. There may be some scattered visits here, over the coming days and such. Let me get the exact date. I can pull it up. But here in about a week, the dead period is going to start, and it'll last through 3 weeks of July. And then that last week of July going into the start of practice, there'll be another period where prospects can visit. That's what Auburn's going to hold their Big Cat recruiting event and maybe bring in some more officials there and try to get it going again as far as, getting the, recruiting cranked back up. But I think what happens a lot of times is June, you get those official visitors in. They visit all their schools. They take 2 or 3 weeks to make up their decision. So I think what you'll see in July, even though it's a dead period, you're going to see a lot of kids making their decisions and announcing commitments to Auburn and other schools. So there'll still be plenty happening, even though it's a dead period. And I've got the schedule right here. So the final day for visitors is June 25th.
Oh, so, okay. Six more days. Yeah, that's just that's next Sunday.
Yep. And then the dead period is June 26th through July 24th. So then you've got that little time there right at the end of July.
Well, that's a good time for me to go on vacation. Yep. See, that makes sense. That's
exactly.
Good. I didn't even know.
Well,
that,
these
but it
coaches
does make sense.
Who have been working their tail off since last fall will finally get some time off here.
It is. Yeah, it has been crazy, and I mean, and hats off to credit to Hugh Freeze and the staff for coming in and they have hit the ground full speed and have not taken a break. That's something that the NCAA. I mean, thank goodness there's a little bit of a period in there for them to be able to spend some time with their families.
Probably needs to be another period sometime in spring, sometime in that area where they can do something similar.
I wonder eventually, are we really going to need that February signing period?
No.
Or they could just be a period where, you could have a period in December and then have just – okay, after the first of the year, just sign if you want, whenever.
It's interesting, but a lot of the talk now is talking about not having the period. At a certain point, they can just sign at any time.
Why not?
Yeah.
If they make up their minds and they want to sign, and then if there's a change or something like that, I'm sure they'd be able to get a waiver. You know, if there's a coaching change.
Right. But I think that may be coming because a lot of the coaches are saying this early period, along with the transfer portal, is just killing them.
Oh, it is. And especially if you're getting ready for a ball game. Right. And now, I mean, last year it worked out better for Auburn not to even be in a bowl game.
Exactly.
For them to be able to concentrate on the personnel and on the roster. But, I mean, if you are, and with the expanded playoffs, there are going to be 12 teams that are trying to prepare for the playoffs, and they've got the transfer portal and the early
recruiting.
Signing period.
Right.
It's like, that's crazy.
That November-December period right now is just too much on the plates of these coaches. So they need to figure out a way to better organize it and give those guys – a chance to do their jobs and not have to try to do three different things at once.
Back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. I think Jerry's back with us. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. As far as your last caller, I think he was referring to moving the All-Star game to Colorado last year and, not honoring Hank Aaron, what he had done. I think that was a slap in the face.
I understand. I mean, it wasn't, and I'm sure that Major League Baseball would say it wasn't intended to be a slap at Hank Aaron.
It was just moving the All-Star game for other reasons. Right. Wasn't about Hank Aaron necessarily.
Well, right.
I hope not.
No, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it wasn't. I'd be very, very surprised if it was. Yeah, appreciate the call, Jerry.
Hey, Brian, how much do you hear NIL factoring in when you talk to recruits about, you know, what kind of decisions they're making? Because I mean, we had all this concern, not just at Auburn, but across college athletics, that NIL was going to become the driving factor in decisions that recruits make. And if that's happening, then I wonder how much credit you give coaches when they assemble quality recruiting classes, right? So I'm just wondering, like, what are you hearing about Auburn's NIL operation? Or
it hardly ever comes up with recruits.
Interesting.
Maybe that's a question we need to start asking more. I don't know what the right answer is.
Well,
there.
The thing is, if Auburn weren't getting the players, maybe you might be asking. Right. But that seems to tell me that it's doing pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, you just want to be in the game, right? You don't want somebody beating you out for all these kids just because you're not.
You don't want them all going to one place and have them say it's because of NIL.
Right. And unfortunately, a lot of that information is going to have to be secondhand or third hand, right? Because I don't think the people with the numbers are, you know, cracking open their binders and saying, "Hey, take a look. And this is what we're paying everybody. This is what we've got on hand."
It's a really interesting thing because NCAA is going out of their way and some college administrators to try to, pull back a little bit on NIL and everything. And the NCAA has failed on so many things, and they're going to fail on this once again, begging, federal.
Oh, yeah, they already did.
They're not going to do it. Okay. And talking to a few, senators up there is not going to change anything unless you get the leadership behind you and you get both parties behind you and you have real representation from student athletes. It's not going to happen.
You're more liable to get that when some of the states that have passed laws that are much more favorable than other states start really, really, beating out those teams that are used to winning, and then their representatives go, hold on.
It's wild. I mean, I think it was Missouri that passed the rule about.
Yeah, really, basically the NCAA or the SEC has no control over what they do.
Right, and they can start giving NIL to high school players, I think it is. And then I think, is it Texas? That's
Missouri, Texas, and who was
the I think the proposed.
I think Texas said the NCAA could not punish their schools for doing their NIL collective however they want to do it.
Well, that's the thing and I believe, there was language in the Texas law that some people interpreted as would it block conferences from regulating these schools. And if that's the case, like, you can't be in the conference, right, if your state has a law that prevents the conference
we can do whatever we want. We can share in the conference money, but you have no control over what.
Your investigators are not welcome in our state. Wait a minute.
If that's what you're worried about as an Auburn administrator, then go down to Montgomery and go lobby those guys and get Alabama's rules changed to be equal to every other state in the SEC.
Once every state starts doing that, then maybe somebody would go, hold on.
Well, one would think that, Alabama, a state without representation in the major professional sports leagues, a state where two of the 10, 15 most prominent college football programs are located. Like, one would think that's a state that would be favorable to.
Ready and willing to make whatever changes
would be
made.
Favorable to put their thumb on the scale if they can for the major football programs. And, I mean, it's a revenue driver in the state, too. I mean, for a variety of reasons. Like, it's advantageous for Alabama to do what they can to keep the college football programs healthy and thriving.
Right on.
Brian, before you head out one more time, let everybody know about AuburnSports.com and what's going on and how they can follow it.
Mostly recruiting. Keep your eye on Khalil House, the offensive lineman from Warner Robins, Georgia, who visited this weekend. Should have a decision soon. I think Auburn's team to beat. We'll have plenty of coverage of that, more recruiting. And anything else that pops up at AuburnSports.com, I'm on Twitter at BMATAU.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot, man. We will – well, I won't. Dan will see you next Monday. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, let's play.
Well, I told you I'm going to be gone next Monday.
We'll see what happens.
I'll be around.
Well, hopefully so. I'm going to be at the beach whether it rains or not.
Not at this rate.
All right, we're back tomorrow. Maybe. Have a good one, everybody.